Space SCPs. Space has fascinated humans in one way or another ever since we first developed eyeballs and looked up at the night sky. Ancient humans developed all sorts of fantastical theories and ideas about the lights in the sky and what was beyond them. Modern humans are no different, and despite all our advances in technology, there's still so much we don't know about space. From Edgar Rice Burroughs' stories about Mars to Star Wars and modern sci-fi video games, there's a wide gamut of ideas about the possibilities of space, ranging from optimistic hope for the human race to the grim darkness of the far-flung future. The SCP universe, of course, likewise has an impressive array of space articles covering the weird, the horrific, and the hopeful. Let's take a look. Let's begin with SCP-1959. An uncontained, unmarked, white spacesuit, similar in make to the Soviet's SK-1 model used in the Vostok program with few alterations. The suit itself appears to be indestructible, although the helmet's visor is badly damaged and misted over, preventing any observation of its interior. It is also known to emit considerable amounts of gamma radiation. So far, all attempts to communicate with it have failed. It appears to continuously orbit around the Earth at a reasonably constant speed, varying in position between low and high Earth orbit. It will ram through any obstacle it encounters, causing grave structural damage. While it is capable of independent movement, it remains motionless most of the time. On the occasion that it does move, its body language shows signs of extreme distress, and it will sometimes attempt to break its visor. There are recorded instances where it hovered in place for a certain period of time before moving off again. According to observations, the subject appears to be resisting some unseen force before being pulled away. It was first observed floating in low Earth orbit in 1971, with an addendum later being added that, following some research on the Soviet space program and declassified files, they have a strong reason to suspect that it is one of three men. Further research is necessary to fully ascertain its identity. This certainly seems like an anomaly that the Foundation definitely could contain. They just don't really feel like it for some reason. Poor guy. Next, we have SCP-1682, a large, segmented, worm-like entity located in the Sun, believed to be approximately 28,000 kilometers in length. Its appearance near solar prominence is believed to be coincidental, as the entity's apparition in relation to the features is not consistent. The entity appears to roam the surface of the photosphere for 3 to 4 months before disappearing again beneath for periods of 8 to 12 months. The extended periods of disappearance, glowing appearance upon resurfacing, and the angle and speed of the entity in relation to the general surface of the photosphere suggest brief contact with radiative portions of the Sun's interior. It's remarked that no abnormal changes in solar activity have been recorded since the entity's arrival in 1986, and the exact nature of the entity remains to be seen. This line, however, is crossed out. On November 28, 2011, the entity emerged from the photosphere at a speed of 1,045 kilometers per second, effectively achieving solar escape velocity. It passed Pluto 2 days later, and the heliosphere on December 2nd. A note from a researcher states that he can't really put a finger on what was happening on the Sun for all those years, and he doesn't think he really wants to. They believe that the creature was refueling for another jaunt into another star, somewhere. It's gone now. Everyone seems relieved, but he can't shake this anxiety that something awful has just happened. After going through an O5-only section, we're given an interview with a D-class after they were exposed to SCP-028 in 1976, prior to the discovery of the entity. 028 is a space in a storage yard that provides total and complete knowledge on a random subject to anyone that enters it. The D-class states that the comet is the in-transit carapace of an interstellar tapeworm, and it has a dormant brood in the radiative sphere of the Sun. It's a lot like a tapeworm, but as far as reproduction goes, it's more like those roach wasps he saw on Nova. The doctor replies that no organism could survive in the radiative sphere of the sun, which seems like a really unusual thing for a Foundation doctor to say. The D-Class replies that it isn't an organism, and it's not in the sun right now. It's feeding someplace else. It's complicated, but those sorts of classifications don't really apply to this thing. The doctor asks if he'd really have them believe there's a clutch of eldritch tapeworms living in the sun. The D-Class replies that he just knows it, as that was the point of them putting him in 028, was learning something. The doctor tells him to just cut the BS, but the D-Class yells that it's a cosmic tapeworm, 27,000 kilometers long, and it lives in the sun. It returns every 76 years, 4 months, 2 weeks after feeding. There's then some data expunged from the record, and the D-Class says that the doctor will just have to wait. Still really not sure why someone working for the Foundation would be incredulous about a bunch of eldritch tapeworms living in the sun. That just seems like something they would assume by default. Moving on, we have SCP-2460, a gravitational anomaly in elliptical orbit around the Earth, with its furthest distance being 12,430 kilometers, and a closest approach of 395 kilometers. At the location of the anomaly, there is an apparent object of approximately 50 meters by 30 meters by 15 meters, and the object has a density approximately 100,000 times the density of the Earth, close to that of a white dwarf star. The shape of this object is variable in appearance, with components of different materials appearing to erupt from its surface only to be reabsorbed. The object is virtually invisible to electromagnetic radiation, and has no measurable charge, magnetic moment, or wave emissions. However, photons in the visible light spectrum still interact with it. The anomaly behaves very differently on the quantum level, and there's a bunch of technical jargon here about bosonic matter and electromagnetic interaction. The net result is that multiple individual objects within the gravitational anomaly occupy the same place at the same time. What appears to be objects growing out of and receding into the gravitational field is actually thousands of co-locating objects oscillating about the center of it. The exceptionally high mass of the anomaly is the result of these thousands of individual objects occupying the same location, all gravitationally bound together. The influence of the gravitation of thousands of objects acts as a strange attractor, keeping each individual object within 105 meters of the center of the field at all times. The chaotic nature of the attractor has caused multiple objects to be shown at the surface at different intervals. Most of the items are just space dust and rocky debris, but there are a few notable ones. One is a planetesimal, basically a really small starter planet that later becomes a planet, which makes up the surface of the field. Of note is the distinct lack of cratering on the surface. A comet nucleus of approximately 5-meter diameter, with visible spectral analysis suggesting that its original location was the Oort cloud, a spacefaring vessel of unknown make, 10 meters long, covered in unidentified symbols. Through a plate glass window, two beings are visible, apparently long deceased and desiccated, resembling crocodilian humanoids. Approximately 1,000 metric tons of hydrogen and helium, compressed under gravitation into a superfluid state. 90 capsules, each containing a single humanoid occupant, all apparently dead and desiccated. Lastly, Foundation Probe 0U11-3 and Agent Rick Roberts, deceased. On February 15th, 2013, a stray orbiting steel bolt attached to a retaining plate from a redacted disaster was seen to be captured by the gravity well and collide with 2460. It was observed that the collision caused no impact site, and the bolt passed through the matter without hindrance. However, post-collision, the bolt and plate no longer registered any electromagnetic field deformation. Further observation demonstrated that the bolt remains attached to the plate, confirming that the co-location effect of items caught within the anomaly does not extend to items that are exposed within milliseconds to it. This observation further suggests that all objects seen inside of it were, at one point, normal matter, transformed by the anomaly into the amalgamation, It's hypothesized that the anomaly annihilates the quantum spin of the subatomic particles, transforming the matter from fermionic to bosonic and allowing it to co-locate. Oh, whoops, I was supposed to just say there was more technical jargon there. On February 5th, 2014, the anomaly was noted to pass within 70 kilometers of Foundation Orbital Unit 11, and a sortie was authorized to intercept it for quantum measurements. Agent Rick Roberts was sent in a probe to examine it at close range. Radio contact with the probe ceased when it came within 5 kilometers of the central mass. Approximately half a second before loss of contact, the apparent density of the low Earth orbit medium was seen to increase by a couple orders of magnitude. All remaining data from the experiment comes from the cameras aboard Orbital Unit 11. Agent Roberts quickly noted the lack of radio contact and engaged thrusters to maneuver away from 2460. The fuel was seen to ignite and pass ineffectually through the hull and cabin of the probe. Unable to adjust position or trajectory, the probe was gravitationally captured by the anomaly and fell into the central mass. This added 15,534 kilograms of mass to the anomaly, and containment procedures were updated to include a mandatory distance of 50 kilometers. We're then given a transcript of a lecture about 2460, given by Dr. Cordelia Argent, principal researcher for the Astronomical Phenomena Division. It reads, "Good evening and welcome. I want to thank everyone for coming this evening. Tonight I am going to explain what exactly SCP-2460 is and the risk it represents for the Earth. I could explain the fermion to boson conversion called quantum spin annihilation, explain how this interaction is possible under a version of supersymmetry, the transformation of quarks to squarks, and so on. But I'm sure that would go over most of your heads. You could learn it all, but you're here to understand what this is and what it means. I'll spare you the physics. I'm sure you've heard stories of walking through walls, ghosts, radio waves, certain anomalies, etc. Phasing is a popular term for it. In essence, SCP-2460 is a collection of objects, asteroids, comets, nebula material, stellar mass, and more, all phasing through each other. It's important to recognize that this phasing is the sole reason all these objects exist in the same place at the same time. This is not a spatio-temporal distortion, at least not anything more than is fully and non-anomalously explainable via its gravity alone. However, what is less explainable is the lack of electromagnetic interaction within SCP-2460. Firstly, this means that there is no radio communication possible with anything within the anomaly. Radio waves pass through it as if it wasn't there. This is also what leads to the phasing effect we see. You know how we are made of atoms, and atoms consist of a nucleus surrounded by an electron cloud. These electron clouds are negatively charged and push each other away, and that's why we can't walk through walls. But within SCP-2460, the electron fields between objects introduced at separate times don't interact, don't push against each other, and as a result, don't stop objects from passing through one another. But wait, you're probably asking, isn't the photon the gauge boson for the electromagnetic interaction? Why do we see anything? Okay, you're likely not asking that, but I did, first thing. The truth is, we don't see most of SCP-2460. Experiment 2460B proved that. We saw the medium density around probe OU-11-3 increase nearly a thousandfold before losing contact. There is a cloud of massive particles that have nearly no interaction with normal matter, extending as far as 5 kilometers from the central mass. There are only two ways these particles interact: gravitationally, and rendering normal matter that comes in contact with it out of phase. These particles are invisible, and otherwise undetectable. All remaining mass was added subsequently, acting as an anchor for the particles. That's why we can see the massive objects in the center. What's the risk from this? Well, it is exceptionally dense, and thus perturbations from its present orbit will preferentially cause the orbit to decay, resulting in SCP-2460 falling to the Earth. Now, since it remains phased out, collision with the Earth won't cause any impact crater. However, the quantum spin annihilation will affect all matter the anomaly passes through, resulting in invisible holes of phased out ground. SCP-2460 will pass unhindered through the center of the Earth, transforming matter the entire way, leaving a giant hole through the center of the Earth that the liquid mantle and core will gush into, the crust and surface eventually falling, unsupported, into the hole. But it won't end there. The momentum in SCP-2460 will propel it all the way back out of the center of the Earth, back to the surface, where it will gravitationally oscillate back and forth, rendering more and more of the Earth out of phase with itself, like Swiss cheese, until the entire planet collapses into a central super-dense pile of untouchable rubble, constituting a QK-class quantum degeneracy end-of-the-world scenario. So I'm sure you agree that we want this thing as far away from us as possible. The problem is, we can't touch it. We can't use thrusters to push it away. There's nothing to push against. We can't deflect it with magnetic fields. There's no electromagnetic interaction. We can only use gravity to pull it away. That means that we will need to tow an asteroid of similar mass into low Earth orbit to carefully slingshot the anomaly away from us, then destroy the asteroid somehow. An asteroid approximately 22 kilometers in diameter should contain enough mass to eject the anomaly. Recommendations have been submitted to O5 Command. But I'm sure you actually are all asking, what is this, and why did it end up here, orbiting around the Earth? Well, it is an amalgamation of weakly interacting massive particles, invisible to electromagnetic radiation, emitting no radiation of its own, and possessing only gravity. In short, ladies and gentlemen, SCP-2460 is dark matter. And when you consider that fully 85% of the mass in the universe is dark matter, we should not ask why we are so unlucky to have a chunk of it orbiting around the Earth. We should ask why we are so lucky that we haven't hit any of this stuff yet. Thank you, and good evening. And that was with her sparing us the physics. So basically, it's a clump of dark matter, which makes up most of the universe, and it causes anything that comes into contact with it to phase out of existence with normal matter. This normally wouldn't be the worst thing ever, since it's just hanging in orbit, but eventually it will stop hanging in orbit and fall to Earth, where it will bounce back and forth through the planet until the whole thing collapses in on itself. Their big plan then is to use a big asteroid to slap the dark matter away, and then somehow destroy the asteroid afterwards. Not exactly a confidence-inspiring plan. Next, we have SCP-4774, the hypothetical Planet 9, a gas giant potentially orbiting the Sun at the outer reaches of the solar system. If it exists, it would be 2 to 4 times the diameter of Earth, and approximately 10 times the mass. Its anomalous properties become apparent whenever any subject attempts to consider the possibility of the planet's existence. Subjects will universally arrive, even when not previously informed of the natures of space, planets in general, or the universe beyond the Earth, at a number of conclusions. One is that if it did exist, it would account for a number of irregularities in the motions of various astronomical bodies. If it didn't exist, it would account for the lack of any human interaction with the planet at any point in history. Another is that the possibility of life existing on the planet cannot be ruled out, and the possibility of sapient life existing on the planet cannot be ruled out. Another is the lack of evidence for the planet's existence could be accounted for by a natural sensory extrapolation concealment field encompassing the region, and that the evidence for the planet's existence could be accounted for by a number of other minor sources, anomalous and non-anomalous. The current theory among research staff is that the effects of the anomaly represent either a mimetic hypothesis, masking the state of the planet, or an ontological anomaly surrounding its potential existence. Our research team was assigned to the anomaly to attempt to solve the question one way or another, but the team has since been disbanded. On June 6th, 2021, A group of 5 human subjects were selected to undertake the first voyage to the predicted location of 4774, on board the semi-autonomous exploration vessel Messier 002. While the initial stage of the voyage passed without incident, complications arose when the vessel began to draw close to the destination. Rather than simply landing on the planet or passing through the empty space, cameras reported a large area of visual distortion, followed by a bright flash of light. The ship's internal systems malfunctioned, jump-starting the Lang distortion drive and propelling the vessel far beyond the edge of the solar system. The crew were eventually recovered 34 days later than planned, but were unable to recall any aspect of the voyage prior to their recovery. As the visual distortion and light are explainable by equipment malfunction, and the memory loss by a slow leak of the LDD coolant system, the anomaly's status remains uncertain. After some extensive questioning, it's been revealed that those affected by the anomaly now arrive at some additional hypotheses. If it existed, the planet would be incapable of supporting intelligent life. Any such life forms as developed on the planet would necessarily be forced to adopt a method of partial non-existence due to the planet's natural inhospitability. If the planet was found not to exist, the inhabiting life forms would clearly not be capable of existence. Since the planet is hypothetical, the life forms native to the planet must also be hypothetical. Investigating the anomaly further would reveal more details about the planet, and therefore render it either proven or disproven, eliminating the possibility of any hypothetical native entities existing. If the Foundation truly exists for the greater good and considers sapient life, hypothetical or not, to be to some degree human, the preservation of such a hypothetical race would be worth the cost of not exploring the true nature of the planet. Therefore, if such a claim to ethical standing is taken as true, the Foundation and related organizations should prevent any such exploration and allow the native entities to continue subsisting in a state of ontological superposition. The current containment procedures were enacted shortly following the incident. Requests to classify the potential inhabitants of the planet as an anomalous phenomenon in their own right have been denied, as no evidence for their existence, or lack thereof, has been or will be found. Further information on the anomaly can be obtained by considering SCP-4774. That sure was a lot of words, but basically the Foundation discovered a hypothetical planet on the edge of the solar system. Or rather, they didn't discover it. The anomaly occurs whenever anyone contemplates on its hypothetical existence, mostly coming to the conclusion that if it did in fact exist, it could have life on it, even sapient life, except that sapient life couldn't really exist on such a hypothetical, harsh planet. If it were to actually exist there, it would also have to be hypothetical in nature, unable to be proven to exist or not exist. If therefore the Foundation cares about sapient life, even if it wasn't necessarily human life, they would have to care about these hypothetical lives. That means that they can't really take any further interest in either proving the planet exists, which would wipe out any hypothetical entities that couldn't survive on such a planet, or proving it doesn't exist, which would also wipe out any hypothetical life that might exist there. Quite the head trip indeed. Lastly, we have SCP-2001, an anomalous series of neural oscillations that occur during 3 of the 4 stages of human sleep. During one of these 3 stages, the amygdala spontaneously enters a state of heightened activity for a period of 10 to 15 minutes. At the conclusion of its active state, the subject is conditioned to one of 3 responses depending on the sleep stage in which 2001 occurred. It appears to show no increased presence in individuals of any race, creed, or gender, and no genetic abnormalities have been associated with 2001. Spectrographic analysis suggests that its presence may not be intraneural, but rather that it may originate from an outside source. Of particular note is that 2001, particularly the Alpha strain, has recently begun affecting a proportionally large population of astronomers, astronauts, and individuals who otherwise deal with space. Of the 3 types of responses to 2001, Gamma individuals are almost indistinguishable from the ordinary population, save for a disparaging attitude towards the topic of space travel. They show an active aversion to discussing space or space exploration in conversations, and will avoid any and all organizations pertaining to the study and development of human space exploration. It's estimated that a single-digit percentage of the population is currently affected by gamma-type symptoms of 2001. Beta-type individuals are instead characterized by a distinct opposition to space exploration, denouncing the importance and safety of space travel in conversations, citing it as extremely dangerous or fruitless. Also common among beta-type individuals is the tendency to construct conspiracy theories regarding humans in space. A double-digit percentage of popular space-related conspiracies are directly linked to one or more beta-type carriers, including one redacted theory. It's noted that the aforementioned individual had never had contact with the SCP Foundation or any of its affiliates. Lastly, alpha-type individuals actively attempt to stop or sabotage all forms of space travel. Individuals displaying symptoms of alpha-type infection will attempt to harm or otherwise interfere with individuals, centers, and activities that pertain to space research or travel. An alpha-positive Foundation researcher was directly responsible for an incident, and were given an incident report for it. It took place during the launch of a manned Foundation shuttle tasked with investigation of another SCP. A crew of Foundation supervisors were on hand to ensure safe takeoff and report any anomalous activity. A junior researcher was tasked with observation of status readings. He was reported to become extremely agitated before yelling unintelligibly to nearby staff after the shuttle achieved liftoff. He then produced an unknown artifact resembling a control pad, now classified as its own SCP. He began to operate it, and the shuttle reported several system failures. The artifact is confiscated by a doctor, and the shuttle reports total loss of power. Communications with the shuttle cease, and its exterior hull begins to break down. The resulting explosion was explained to onlookers and the press as a GPS satellite that had suffered a fuel leak during launch. Non-Foundation witnesses were administered amnestics. We're then given an entry from that junior researcher's journal, written the day before the incident. It reads, "I wish to state first that my mind and body are perfectly sound. I am prepared to submit myself to any and all tests to prove that I'm clean. I have the answer to SCP-2001. Just yesterday, during an interview with an alpha-infected D-class, I was asked a question that stopped my mind for a minute. The woman I was interviewing asked me if I knew the Foundation was right. I said no, I wasn't sure. Then she asked me, what if we were right? I could only assume that by we she meant 2001 carriers. I said nothing for a while, and then she spoke. She told me of a dream she'd had a while ago. She said that something talked to her, told her about how dangerous outer space was. It showed her the beasts that roam the void between stars, about the fractal beings that absorb the very fabric of reality, about the data expunged that we're keeping in that godforsaken door. And she was scared. She told me that at the end of the dream, as she woke up, it told her what it was. It's all of space. Space fears for us. We're living, breathing life forms, and space loves us and cherishes us. She asked me if I had any idea what the chances of intelligent life forming on another planet are. Then she told me a number that took a minute and a half to recite. By this point, I couldn't speak. I started thinking about the demographics of infection, about the symptoms, about data expunged, and suddenly it all made sense. Some of the things she said stuck in my brain, and they all added up to the same thing. That we are in grave danger if we go out there. We can't go out there. We can't go out there. We can't. There's a reason behind SCP-2001. and it's nowhere near as terrifying as all my colleagues think. Space wants to protect us. There are things out there that would wipe humanity clean off of this plane of existence, and we are too precious to our mother, to our host, to the universe we live in, for her to allow that to happen. What I am going to do tomorrow is not a result of infection. It is not a result of madness. It is not a result of anything other than purest knowledge. You see, I've found out the truth, and it's more beautiful than I ever could have dreamed. Lastly, we're given an email sent from the research head for 2001 to the site director. It reads, "The research team and I have just made a rather unsettling discovery regarding SCP-2001. Our suspicions were piqued when we found the journal. First, the writing leading up to the day of the incident was entirely different in tone than the rest of his journal. He rants and raves about space for pages and pages. It's as if he just spewed his brain onto the page. Second, it wasn't something he would ever do, end the lives of 5 Foundation astronauts the way he did. That's something we neglected to mention about 2001's Alpha Strain, that individuals seeking to interfere with manned space travel will not undertake actions outside their moral reasoning. This meant that the Alpha Strain of SCP-2001 was safer than it seemed, or so we thought. See, we proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that he did have SCP-2001. All the symptoms he displayed were completely on target for the Alpha Strain, with the exception of his final actions. So we researched it. More specifically, we researched the D-class that he talked with on the day before the crash. We sent subjects into her cell and asked her to talk with them. She said just about the same thing to most people, with a couple of exceptions. When she talked to certain subjects, she would pepper her rants with a couple of distinct phrases. And what we discovered was that individuals who responded to these phrases began to behave in a similar manner to the junior researcher on the day of the crash. By now, I'm sure you can deduce what we learned from these findings. It appears there is some sort of fourth strain, one that functions differently from any of the 3 we've encountered before. We call it Alpha Prime. It is a mimetic variant propagated by certain individuals afflicted with the Alpha Strain through the use of several trigger phrases. If a listener responds to those phrases, the symptoms of Alpha Prime begin to develop. Though not much more potent than the regular Alpha Strain in terms of the carrier's attitude towards space exploration, it does have the additional effect of overriding the moral code of its hosts. We don't know exactly to what lengths an Alpha Prime carrying subject would go to prevent us from engaging in manned space travel. Perhaps therein lies the most worrying element of this newfound strain. We know next to nothing about it. It is in the opinion of myself and many members of the research team that this information should be kept separate from the official SCP-2001 documentation, including the findings about the moral restrictions of the standard Alpha Strain. We don't know how many individuals have succumbed to the words of their Alpha-afflicted colleagues, and we don't want a mass outbreak of paranoia and fear among Foundation personnel. If word spreads about a sociopathy-inducing mimetic variant of 2001, we have no idea what could happen within our ranks. Quite frankly, we don't want to find out. Standard SCP-2001 checks are still in order for all sites. Tell the MTFs to keep rounding up the Alpha Strains and sending them to me. After all, we've got counter-memes to develop. We secure, we contain, and we protect. Alright, so it's an anomaly that affects certain people, causing them to have varying degrees of distaste for space and space exploration. The Foundation believes that it's not really that dangerous, since it doesn't really cause them to do things they wouldn't normally do, outside of spreading conspiracy theories about the moon being haunted or something. Then one Foundation junior researcher sabotages a shuttle launch, killing some people, and writes in his journal that he's doing it because he firmly believes that space is a living entity trying to protect humanity from what's out there. The Foundation concludes that not only is that pretty unlikely, there is another strain of this infection that causes people to prevent space exploration at all costs, and could potentially spread to anyone. In other words, something really doesn't want humanity exploring space, and doesn't care who gets hurt in the process. Space has always been ripe for science fiction and horror, a practically endless expanse of the unknown. Pretty much anything could theoretically be out there, tucked away behind a star, dwelling on some far-flung planet, and while humanity in the real world is a long, long way off from exploring much of anything out there, it doesn't stop people from wondering and fantasizing. The actual answer, of course, is that there's almost certainly a whole lot of nothing out there, but that's not nearly as exciting.